Friends, this is your co-host, Will Blue Otter. Join us now to learn how to legally worship using indigenous earth-based healing and empowering ceremonies. Aho. As Blue Otter, seventh great-grandson of Old Tassel, first beloved man of the Cherokee, I'm remembering what Old Tassel said to the prevailing culture. Many proposals have been made to us to adopt your laws, your religion, your manners, and your customs. We have done so. Now it is time for our cultures to accept Old Tassel's ways and assisting us to walk in harmony with Mother Earth and Father Sky. Aho. Friends, allow me now to introduce you to James Flaming Eagle Mooney, elder and Seminole medicine man. How are you, my brother? This is Jasa Kuo, a seventh great-grandson of Saunuka, Raven of Chota, the keeper of the Holy Cherokee Ark, first beloved man of the Cherokee. Tonight, and every Sunday night in this time slot, join us to learn how to legally regain the use of the sacramental plants of our ancestors. Oh. Well, hello everybody. Once again, you have made contact with your fearless leader, Blue Otter, coming to you from an underground bunker deep beneath a two-story outhouse next to a nondescript shack in an undisclosed location deep in the backwoods of Tennessee where sunshine has to be piped in. And we've got a very special program tonight. This is going to be a weekly broadcast. And, of course, we've got my trusty sidekick, Mark the Badger, Borcherding. And our very special and honored guest is James Flaming Eagle Mooney. And we're honored. Honored to have you. You're what they would call a living martyr for a very worthy cause. James with the Oklavaha Native American Church. Welcome, James. How are you?
I'm really fine, thank you, Blue Otter. It's an honor to be here. And I want you to know I don't see myself as a martyr at all. I just made a stand. And made a stand for who I am and for what I represent.
I know you don't. I just want to make the point because there can be living martyrs and but you went balls to the wall for this and because you did, a lot of things have changed and we appreciate what you've done. It's you've gone where angels fear to tread.
Well, like I said, it was an honor, to be frank with you.
But well, for the folks that don't know what you've been through, let me, first of all, I'm following up on a prophecy that Tom Brown Jr.'s grandfather, Stalking Wolf, gave him. Stalking Wolf is the fellow that was the Lipan Apache elder that taught Tom Brown Jr., the tracker, everything he knows. And this man had the gift of prophecy. Sometimes he could, 15 seconds before a mouse crossed the path, he could say, what's going to happen. But he told Tom Brown Jr. That someday there'd be a drug war, but that the government would fight it in the wrong way. And it didn't, you know, sometimes elders will say things and you really don't understand, you know, what the fulfillment is until things actually start to happen. I guess that's Creator's way of letting you know he's in charge. And but that's the way things are going. Oddly enough, James and I are both reformed narcs. I was a narc when I was in high school. I was a civil defense worker and a military officer in the Oregon National Guard Reserve, and would have been, had it been called on by the governor, I would have had to enforce drug laws. And I was just now learning here recently that James was in the same position. We lived in Hurricane, Utah. So just we'll turn it over to you, you know, from there, James, unless Mark has some direct questions. Do you have anything to ask, James?
No, not right now.
Okay. Yeah, tell us about what you're all about, James.
Well, basically, you know, to cut it right to the chase, is I'm a representative, or Aquavit Native American Church is representative of the indigenous American Native culture of North and South America. That's what the Native American Church actually is. And it was actually incorporated in 1918 by a group of American Native medicine people out of Oklahoma. And what I'm going to share with you, not very many people really know, even though it's well documented, but most people don't really know that in 1918, the Bureau of Indian Affairs, with the influence of a lot of religious groups and with people that wanted to capitalize on federally recognized tribal governments or the lands, influenced the Bureau of Indian Affairs to attempt to outlaw the entire American Native culture. I mean, when you think about that, that our government or influences to the Bureau of Indian Affairs, which is a government agency, attempted to outlaw the entire American Native culture.
Yeah.
To fully understand why they were doing this, is in 1876, under the Dawes Act, which a lot of people are very familiar with, but with specific the Rosebud Reservation of the Lakota Sioux Nation. The government argued this particular point that the American Native culture was a spiritual organization that honored and that their whole religion and their whole culture was intertwined with the earth. And that was actually made into a law in 1876 under the Dawes Act in relationship to the Rosebud Reservation. Well, when they did that, or when the President of the United States at that time, which was Ulysses S. Grant, when he signed that into law, that started a rampage by the Bureau of Indian Affairs to actually kill off as many Indians as you could possibly imagine. Now, that was a government policy, the extermination order.
Mm-hmm.
And they were killing as precisely the medicine people. That's the reason a lot of Native American people to this day do not want to say that they're a medicine person, because that was basically a death warrant on people. The last government-authorized murdering of Indians and of their medicine people happened in and around 1890, December the 30th. And that was what is known as the Wounded Knee Massacre. Now, that was the last government-authorized murdering of American Native people and their medicine people. Shortly before Wounded Knee, a fellow by the name of Sitting Bull, which was a medicine person, but would not sign the agreement, so he had some of his, the Bureau of Indian Affairs had some of their Indian police actually murder Sitting Bull. And then the Wounded Knee Massacre happened. Well, when that did happen, then it woke up the citizenship of the United States government, or United States citizenship, where they said, what are we doing? We're murdering people. And so they put a stop to it with the government agencies doing, actually, that was their policy. And so, but because the public finally stood up and said, hey, we got to stop that. So that was the last actual government-sanctioned murdering of Native American spirituality and their medicine people. But when that happened, because the Bureau of Indian Affairs was in control, and they wanted to, they can't control the spirituality of Native American people, just like the federal government can't control the Catholic Church or the Mormon Church, or there's no control. But they had to control as much as they could possibly do because of the value of the land, getting oil, and et cetera, and, you know, it goes on and on, of how the United government has utilized the Bureau of Indian Affairs to pillage and to rape the land, especially reservation lands. And when you sit down and look at it, how many oil wells have been placed on there, mainly because they got it for almost a pittance. Well, anyway, when that happened, then they just outlawed all of the Native the entire Native American culture. If you were caught doing prayers with the sacred prayer pipe, or doing a sweat lodge, or doing peyote, or any type of a Native American ceremony on reservation lands, you were arrested and put into jail. And so they were trying to stifle the religion because they knew the power of it if they were able to deal with it, or to be able to worship in their religious practices, and then they couldn't rape the land and do all these other kinds of things. And so they outlawed Native American spirituality on the Indian reservations. And at the same time, they started what they called the cultural genocide, where they took the children from their parents and put them into school and beat the tar out of them if they spoke their own language, or cut their hair, and it was just totally to kill the entire culture. But the medicine people started doing their ceremonies off of the reservations onto the United States, where they had no control. The Bureau of Indian Affairs had no control over that. And plus, keep in mind, the reservations are sovereign nations, so the First Amendment or the Constitution has no power on the reservations, or the government agencies didn't have to follow the principles of the Constitution on the sovereign nations. But so when the medicine people started to go off the reservations and practicing the ceremonies off the reservations, the Bureau of Indian Affairs had no control over that. So what they did is, in 1918, the Bureau of Indian Affairs went to the House of Representatives and sponsored a bill to actually outlaw the entire American Native culture. And they pinpointed peyote because peyote is used in all the ceremonies, not just the sun dance, not just the peyote ceremonies like people know about them right now, but every ceremony was utilized because it is the most safest plant for spiritual manifestations than anything else that you can imagine. You can't overdose on it, and you can't, it's not addictive. It is just this beautiful herb that enlightens you and puts you at oneness with God. And so they want, and plus they understood that the Native American culture thrived because of their ceremonies. That's how they carry the culture forward, is through their ceremonies. So in 1918, they attempted to outlaw the Native American culture that is being was being practiced off of the Indian reservations. My great-grandfather at that time, who was a Smithsonian Institute ethnologist, he argued in front of Congress to say that this law, I mean, you can't outlaw an entire culture. But the pressures and the momentum was so great, it actually passed the House of Representatives to outlaw the American Native culture. But in the Senate, they used my great-grandfather's argument that he placed in front of the House of Representatives, and they killed the bill. Boom. And so right after they killed the bill, then my great-grandfather went to the Oklahoma spiritual leaders, not the tribal governments, but the spiritual leaders, and said, this will not stop the Bureau of Indian Affairs. You have got to incorporate your culture under the Native American Church so it could be protected by the First Amendment of the Constitution, or the freedom of religion. That way, your culture can maintain itself. And so, in 1918, my great-grandfather wrote the bylaws to the First Native American Church Incorporated. And he said, this still will not stop them. And what happened is the Bureau of Indian Affairs started to set out this propaganda that in order to practice this Native American religion, you had to be from a federally recognized tribal government, or a Native American of the federal tribal government, trying to keep it onto the Indian reservations where they could kill it off or stifle it. But it was a total lie. And the government bought into that, hook, line, and sinker, for a variety of reasons, mostly because of financial and greed and pride. Basically, the churches wanted it because the churches felt intimidated by a religion that says something like this. The white man goes into their churches to hear somebody talk about God, where we go into our teepee and we talk to God face to face. That's very intimidating when you have a Catholic church that has a pope that says in order for you to get to heaven, you got to go through the pope or do what the pope says. So when you have a religion that says all of that is not necessary, it's more necessary for you to make a face-to-face, one-on-one relationship with God. So these churches didn't like that. So they really worked hard to try to keep it suppressed, that in order to be a member of the Native American Church, you had to be from a federally recognized tribal government, which is just hogwash. That's like saying, in order to be a member of the Roman Catholic Church, you have to be born in Italy. I mean, that's nuts. But they actually pulled that off. And until a case was challenged in 1990, I believe it was Boyle versus the United States, where they tried to say that he, because he was white, he could not utilize peyote. Well, the thing is, they went to the, I think it was the New Mexico federal courthouse, and they ruled, what are you trying to do? You can't legislate spirituality, religion by race. And then the United States lost. And then he challenged it, went to the 10th Circuit Court, and again, it was a scathing statement that you cannot legislate it by race. And so that ruling was held because of the movement of the Bureau of Indian Affairs, and now organization that is trying to keep the Native American spirituality on the reservations. They developed an organization called NARF, Native American Rights Fund, which is actually ran by an Indian or a couple of Indians. But they're just, they're just as crooked as anything could possibly be. And what they've done is they get advice from the United States Attorney General's office. So the Attorney General's office has asked NARF, is this church a legitimate church? And any church that is off the reservation, they will say, no, it's not. So they're trying to keep it suppressed to the Indian reservations, and that's what they said about me when they tried to prosecute me. NARF is the one that instigated the entire prosecution, telling the government that I'm not a legal Native American church, even though I'm actually an extension of the Lakota Sioux and the Seminole Nation. So, I mean, it was a total lie, but because the United States government has been so invested in this lie since 1918, they pulled it off until it got to the Utah Supreme Court, and they said, what are you doing? You can't prosecute a church, for goodness sake. And the Chief Justice Durham of the Utah Supreme Court said that. Is this an attempt to outlaw a church? And they said, yeah. And they was downhill from then
on.
And then the NARF went to the Utah United States Attorney General, lied through the state of Utah, and said that I was a fraud. And everything I did, I was it was a conspiracy to do peyote so that I could set up some peyote card. I don't know what the heck was on their mind, but it was saying that I was a fraud. And then when my defense attorneys did their due diligence, they found out not only did they lie, they the United States or the state of Utah withheld exculpatory evidence, which is a federal violation. They lied. The DEA officers lied in a court hearing, and everything that they said about me, or what was said, what I was standing for, and who I am, proved to be true, and left these people totally in the lurch. And so, when they found that out, and the prosecuting attorneys found it out from the defense attorneys, they said, "Oh my gosh, we're in bad shape here." And so they begged. They begged the federal court judge, Ted Stewart, please dismiss all these charges against James Mooney before an evidential hearing, because we cannot have this information in the court records, or this it could undermine our entire judicial system. And so they dropped all these charges before an evidential hearing. And that's the first time this type of thing has happened in the history of our judicial system.
That's amazing.
That's what the Native American Church is now. Okay? It is a church that is totally, has the same rights, privileges, and protections as the Catholic Church, as the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. All of it, but the courts are still trying to ignore it. And so when they want to raid a Native American church off of Indian reservations, what they do is they don't tell the judge that they were planning on raiding a church. They say it's something else. And so the judge, because if they told the judge that they're raiding the church, then the judge would say, prove to me that they meet a compelling interest standard. And there's no way that they can do that. A compelling interest standard means that you're building a bomb and you can prove that they want to bomb something off of their property or something like that. And if you're distributing peyote, that doesn't even get on the table of a compelling interest standard.
Yeah.
And in 1990 or 91, they had a, which was sponsored by NARF again, they had two peyote Native American church members, Indians, fired in the state of Oregon. And they ended up trying to get their unemployment insurance. And it went to the Oregon Supreme Court, Smith won that. Then it went to the 10th Circuit Court, and he won that. And then it went to the United States Supreme Court, and they lost it. And when they lost that case at the Supreme Court level, it eliminated the compelling interest standard for religions. And when that happened, the Catholic Church under Ted Kennedy at that time, and the Mormon Church under Senator Orrin Hatch, who was the senior or the chairman of the Senate judicial system,
mm-hmm.
or judicial committee, and they were all freaked out because the compelling interest standard was demolished with that Smith ruling. And because of my circumstances and having off of a Native American church, my attorney was working with the attorneys in the Senate trying to draft a law that would enable and reinstitute the compelling interest standard for religion, because the Catholic Church was concerned and the Mormon Church was concerned because of that Smith case ruling that the compelling interest standard was abolished for all religions. And so they said, how can we protect the Native American Church so that if they go down, we'll go down. And so we've got to word this so that they can't find a loophole to eliminate the compelling interest standard again. And so they worked, oh my gosh, from 1990 to about 2000, or exactly. And they came up with a law called Religious Land Use and Institutionalized Persons Act of 2000. And when they did that, that reinstituted the compelling interest standard that now they can't go after the Mormon Church and they can't go after the Catholic Church, nor can they go after Native American Church. And how they did it by wording, it's called Religious Land Use and Institutionalized Persons Act of 2000. But in the law, they stated something about interstate commerce and from other countries and Indian reservations. And the only thing that has interstate commerce is peyote. And that's how they got in without naming a church, a specific church, a specific sacrament, or a specific race. Now, the compelling interest standard is instituted again. But NARP and the U.S. Attorney General's offices spread throughout the whole United States, they don't want to own that because the moment they own it, then they realize there is a big hole in the war on drugs. Because now all you have to do is belong to the Oklahoma Native American Church, which is the only Native American church practicing Native American spirituality off of Indian reservations. I have right now Indian or federally recognized Native American churches that are becoming Oklahoma Native American Church because they know that so that they can practice their religious off of Indian reservations. It is so powerful. And now all people have to do is join Oklahoma Native American Church, and guess what? They're protected. They cannot be arrested with legal standing. They cannot be arrested. Okay? And if they do, then the arresting officer, the judges, and all these other people, they are violating your civil liberties, which is a felony, and you can put a judge in prison. But until we get people standing up, it's not going to happen because NARP and the Bureau of Indian Affairs have clouded everybody, and it's just going to have to be just like it was with the Wounded Knee Massacre in 1890, December the 30th. The citizenship has got to put a stop to it. And so my concern now, or my major objective, is to educate people. Here it is. Join the church. And they say, well, they're going to arrest me. I said, yeah, well, do exactly what I did. Don't plea bargain, because the moment you plea bargain, you lose. Mm-hmm. You don't plea bargain, you'll go to the Supreme Court, and you will win. You will win. There's no way to get around.
Yeah. Well, it's like I said, you're using the white man's tools to tear down his house, and I didn't originate that statement, but that's what's really going on here.
Well, it's true, you know, and the reason I went into this with a lot of confidence when they raided our Native American church, and I submitted some papers for people to see, and the thing is, but these people are standing tall. They're not plea bargaining, and it is causing them, I mean, the states and the federal government, all kinds of headaches. Because they don't know what to do, because what they've been doing for the last 100 years almost is intimidating people. But people are not, they're so convicted, they have such convictions on their medicine that there's no intimidation. You can throw the book at me, that's what I said. I just say, this is who I am, you can do whatever you want with me, but I'm not going to play your game. And plus I knew the laws. I mean, I was undercover for 7 years, for goodness sakes. I was a cop. I knew the laws. I know, and that's what I belong to an organization called LEAP, Law Enforcement Against Prohibition. And that's nothing but over 40,000 people belong to this now. And these, and there's over 1,500 speakers, such as myself. And these are judges. These are governors, ex-governors of states. These are legislators. These are prosecuting attorneys that know that this entire war on drugs is illegal. And we're putting an end to it. And the Oklahoma Native American Church can speed it up even more so when people join the church and they stand up for their rights and by not plea bargaining.
Wow. Yeah, and well, have you seen the way prophecy has worked its way into this whole? Have you followed the breadcrumbs that have to do with a wounded knee and because I look at cross cultural situations and are you aware of the? The prophecy that Joseph Smith was given, and the reason why
of the Mormon Church,
yeah,
absolutely. You know, some people, I tell you, you know, I'm a little hesitant because I have a lot of respect for the LDS faith. I mean, I have a lot of respect, and I mean, it's a young church, and so it makes a lot of mistakes, and they blow it. I mean, it's just like a little kid. When they start walking, they fall down. It's just the way it is. And,
yeah.
And they're a young church, and they've got, I mean, they've got some real horrible things that they have to eventually face up to it. But all in all, I mean, they really do a tremendous amount of goodness, and it's, I mean, it's a wonderful religion as far as I'm concerned. However, if it got, I don't know what's going to happen when this evidence is going to get around to the entire Native or American, mm-hmm. The entire citizenship of the United States. It has proven almost unequivocally Joseph Smith got his visions first from using sacred Datura, second through Amanita Muscaria, and third, because he found it so safe, was peyote. That's where he got the Mormon Church was actually instituted from the visions of peyote and these other indigens, okay? And not only that, in a spring conference prior to his death, he proclaimed that the entire Mormon Church needs to seek out advice and guidance from the indigenous Native American people.
Well, Second Nephi chapter 3, which was footnoted up until 1906, and those footnotes were written by the man that they call the most intelligent man in the church. It said that there was a mention of a choice seer in there, and they said that'd be a future Indian prophet. Well, in the mid-80s, well, they took that out of the Book of Mormon 1906 English edition, left it in the Spanish edition until 1920. In the mid-80s, they started saying that's Joseph Smith. Well, it can't be Joseph Smith because Joseph Smith is not a Native American because it's and there's a lot of other qualifications in there Joseph Smith blew a lot of things. But if you go to Second Nephi chapter 3, you get the picture. Plus, Joseph was headed for the Rocky Mountains to look for this choice seer. When he had crossed the Mississippi River, he was on the way to the Rockies when he was called back, and shortly thereafter he was murdered. But he had been told, he asked in the Doctrine and Covenants, well, when will I see Jesus again? And he was told, trouble me no more on this, but if you live to be 85 years old, which is the last week of December of 1890, he says, you'll see Jesus again. Well, he was dead, but that was about 3 days after that is when the massacre at Wounded Knee happened because of what happened at Walker Lake, which is, 300 miles or so west of Salt Lake. Brigham Young followed up on that. He told the earliest pioneers, intermarried with the Indians, but then they got into it with the Black Hawk War, and they just kind of left that behind. But originally, you're right, the Mormon Church was... They were supposed to follow the Red Road, what we'd call the Red Road today. And they're just
yeah. I I have to agree with you. You know, I'm not familiar with the other things that you've talked about, but I do know about certain traditions that the Native Americans were to honor these people, as these white people, these kind of, they're supposed to honor them and to help them out in any way they could. However, especially with the Paiutes, I mean, they had no idea they would be murdered by these people.
Well,
and it was very, very confusing to them. And so it was almost like a, it was really weird. But,
well,
I mean, I spent so many hours with Paiute elders that,
yeah.
Oh my gosh, I mean, the stories that they tell is just heart-rending.
Well, you know, for a church that was supposed to seek out indigenous wisdom, the Lakota would tell you they were responsible for the War of the Mormon Cow, which Crazy Horse witnessed as a young lad, and of course the massacre in southern Utah that happened. Those people, the Baker Fancher party. They were murdered at Mountain Meadows. That party, the wagon train started at Harrison, Arkansas. And if you look back at the, and of course there was a Cherokee reservation there between 1817 and 1835. And when you look at the ancestry of the Bakers, they were mixed blood Cherokee descendants. And plus the California militia showed up. And they sought out Joseph Smith's bodyguard. Porter Rockwell led them about 7 miles north of the Idaho state line, north of Logan, Utah. And they massacred 300 or so men, women, and northern Shoshone men, women, and children. So, yeah,
that was the Bear River massacre.
Right, exactly. So for
that was a total lie. What was the colonel's name was O'Donnell or O'Connor or something like that?
He was supposed
Connor?
To be California militia. He was the only one in uniform, and it's really kind of murky, but it happened. There is a memorial plaque there. But, you know, up around Brigham City, you know, there was an old estate reservation there. Still, I think there still is at Northern Shoshone, and, most of them are members of the church. But,
yeah.
Oh, yeah, it's
Connor worked the rest of his life basically hating Mormon because he was lied to by Brigham Young. And because the reason they slaughtered those people is that they got false witnesses that the Indians had killed some Mormon pioneers, which was a total lie. And when Connor found that out, he was just livid that he killed all these people for naught. And he worked the rest of his life trying to expose the corruption at that time of you know, it's hard for me to, I mean, I really respect the Mormon Church in so many different ways.
Me too.
But they've got a history that they're going to have to follow their own principles, I think, you know.
One other observation. When I was in graduate school up in Logan, I was watching TV one night, and there was a show called ABC News Tonight, and it was a story about a dark-complected white man that in the 1930s appeared to the natives in the Tana Islands, and he never told them his name was. He stayed with them for a year. He told them, do not follow the missionaries that the white man is going to send you. And he gave them a drink that put them in an altered state, and he gave them a ceremony. And they called him John From or John Come. And that was the, he told them that someday the United States would save them. And that was the beginning of the so-called cargo cults. But this is true, but the description that they gave of John Come was almost word for word the same description that Wovoka gave of Jesus, that he wasn't dark like the Paiutes are very dark people. He said he's not as dark as us, not as light as white people, but And the circumstances were all exactly the same. This mysterious European, dark-skinned European man that appeared in the 30s when the French were starting to make inroads into the South Pacific. I don't know whether you knew that or not.
No.
But well,
I know Wagoka. I know Pyramid Lake in Nevada. I mean, I'm very familiar with him.
But you gave him a gave him a drink to put him in an altered state.
Yeah, that was peyote tea for sure. Mm-hmm. But the thing is that Wagoka, most people don't know, was actually a Mormon. And the whole thing about the ghost church, you know, about that was patterned after the LDS's sacred garments, you know.
Yeah, his grandson, Andy Vidovich, taught the original ghost dance to the cast and crew of the movie Billy Jack. And it's online, originalghostdance.com. You can see the original dance. It's a spiral dance. But anyway, I just want to throw a couple things in the mix and let you go on.
Well, I want to just say again, you know, the history is the way it is, and there's certain things that need to be addressed for people to go forward, and I just think that, you know, I was talking with a good friend of mine just the other day. His name is Chief Gary Tom of the Pipe Springs Reservation. He and I have been for 25 years.
I met his dad.
That's right. Anyway, Gary and I were talking the other day, and we were talking about the different circumstances that are going on in the state of Utah. And I just said, you know, Gary, you really walk that fine line, and you just do it really well. And I said, what's your secret to it? And he says, patience. And I really believe right now that all injustices will be resolved with patience, love, and forgiveness. And I think it's time for the Native American culture and its people to just forgive, just to forgive, let go. And it's like when Leslie Fulbel blessed me and also the Native American Church as a Lakota church, which happened to be a written document. We wrote it down on a hospital napkin to record it. And that was one of the things that the prosecuting attorney just absolutely couldn't deal with, is when they found out that we're actually a Lakota Sioux Native American church. that ended their whole attempted prosecution. But the thing is that I went up to South Dakota to get a blessing from him because of a variety of things, and I'm not going to go into that right now. And I remember I was standing at the doorway to this hospital, and he looked at me, and he was in his bed, hospital bed, and he looked at me, and he just stopped. He never saw me, didn't know anything about me, and he looked at me, and he says, you need my help. And I says, yeah, I do. And he said, well, come on over here. And so I handed him a bag of peyote. I think it was about a couple hundred peyote buttons. It could have been 1,000. I don't know. But it was a lot of peyote buttons. And he took that peyote buttons, placed it to his heart, and he started weeping of gratitude. I mean, I had never experienced such gratitude in my life. I have just never have done that. And I was just overwhelmed. And he said, well, let's get on with this blessing that you need to get. And so he blessed it. He blessed me. And then he said to me, you didn't understand a thing I said, did you, James? And I said, no, you said it in your language, and I don't understand your language at all. And then he held the peyote with his one hand to his heart, and with the other hand, he pulled me close to me and looked me right in my eyes. And he said, take this medicine to the white man, James. Now, I want you to get this, and your listeners. Here's a man that is a direct descendant of the people of his people that were murdered at Wounded Knee. And he's requesting me to take the most sacred thing into him, to the descendants of the people that murdered his families. You talk about forgiveness. I was blown away.
Yeah.
I was literally blown away. And so my segment of this, of what I'm talking about, is, and this is really what I would like your listeners to adhere to, especially if they're Native Americans, is we got to forgive. It's over with. It happened before. I mean, Wounded Knee happened in 1890. You know, that's over. That's that nonsense. They're not killing us anymore. They're not killing the medicine people anymore. Okay? They may be sending us. So I spent a few days in jail. Big freaking deal. I had 3 squares, a bunk, and everybody treated me wonderful. Big deal. You know what I'm saying to you?
Mm-hmm.
I've got no ill feelings to anybody. To anybody. All I want right now, as I did in 9-1-1, I flew out. I was the first air flight out of Salt Lake City and that flew into New York City on 9-1-1. It was about 3 days after the towers went down. And the people requested me to come over and come there to help them out, to get over their grieving and to get back into the game. I spent 5 days, almost 24 hours a day, people coming into these apartments, one after another, for 5 days, giving them peyote. They'd come in and shock. They were in shock, literal shock. And I'd start feeding them medicine. And then within an hour or so, then all of a sudden they'd start sobbing. It's just uncontrollable sobbing. It's the same pattern. I probably went through 300 to 400 people, and the same pattern. And then all of a sudden they got through the sobbing, and they just had this incredible feeling, and they got up and they just left and thanked me and stuff like that. It just was ongoing, 24. So the Native American church ceremonies are here to serve this culture. That's what it's about, is to serve, because they work in the prison system. We using our programs, using the Native American ceremonies, eliminate recidivism from 90% to less than 30%. That's documented. So it's all proven. And that's what it's all about now. It's got nothing to do with, you know, hating and disliking and being fearful. It's all to do is serve our fellow human beings. And these ceremonies have existed from the beginning of time to serve our human beings through the most difficult of circumstances. And so that's what we're about now. And right now, Oklahoma Native American Church can put a true end to the war of the war on drugs, which is a plague perpetrated on our own citizens. I mean, what a gift that is right now. And then not only that, the reason for people being addicted to behaviors, the Native American ceremonies can cure that too. It's documented. Harvard, a hospital, McLean Hospital, did a five-year... survey, or I forgot what they call it.
Yeah, research.
They did a 5-year research, and they found out people that take peyote on a regular basis score higher on their mental indexes than people that do not.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's just incredible when you think about that. And so now it's just time for us to forgive and take the lead of Leslie Fogel. Take this medicine that's so special to me. Take it to that white man. It's forgiveness. It's the time of forgiveness. It's the time for people to come together and put that nonsense away. It's not serving anymore. It's not. There's no reason for it. The Native American spirituality isn't here to make retribution or do any of that. It's here to serve, just like we did in 9-1-1. That's this part of the segment. That's what I want to end it with. All these atrocities and these things, these bad things, they've happened. That was yesterday. That was years ago. It was more than yesterday. It was years and years ago. even the situation I went through. That was in 2000. I think it was totally ended in 2006. Let's forget all that stuff. That doesn't serve us anymore. Let's go forward and help our fellow human beings with love and forgiveness. That's where we're at. That's what the Native American Church is about now. That's what off of the Native American Church is.
Well, we've got to help people get over the bigotry. Now, I remember you telling us back in 95 that, because I lived in Gunnison, you know, you lived in Gunnison, the state prison was there, and I remember you saying that your recidivism rate, you know, instead of being a high recidivism and low success rate, they were flipped. I think it was like, you know, 80-20, and you've, anyway, apparently a delegation came down from Salt Lake, you know, were wondering how you were doing it, and the first thing that came out of somebody's mouth was a woman said, okay, we want to know what kind of witchcraft you've got going on here. So that's the attitude.
That's true. Or once we, I'm a little embarrassed about sharing this after I just got through saying what I said, but an organization that had a program that was getting about $1.5 million, I think $1 million, I'm not quite sure, but $1.5 million of budget, and I could tell you the name, but I'm not going to do that, came into my office and said, James, I understand you got these incredible figures and documented. I said, yeah, I think I do. And at that time, the recidivism was almost 90%. And then my figures showed after 18 months, which is a year and a half,
mm-hmm.
it was under 30%. And so it just blew him away. And so he said, gosh almighty, I can't believe this. And so he did. What he did, he asked me, can I have this report? I said, sure, here, take it. And so he took my report, went to the state legislators, got $1.5 million for his program, and guess what? They canceled. They eliminated my program.
I guess
it was being run by this heathen, I guess. I don't know.
Well, I guess you wanted to change gears.
Yeah.
But I guess you wanted to kind of change gears in this next segment. Oh, by the way, if you ever need to take a break, you know, we've got lots of good bumper music, and just let us know when if you need to take a break.
Why don't we take a break, and then we'll talk about some good things that people are doing, okay?
Okay, that sounds good. How about Floyd Red Crow Westerman? They didn't listen. About 3 minutes, okay?
Oh. That's fantastic. Floyd is a great guy.
Okay, bye-bye.
And I told them not to dig for coal, or if they did, the eagle would die. They didn't listen. They didn't listen. They didn't listen to me. And I told them if the eagle died, there would be no keeper of the land. They didn't listen. They didn't listen. They didn't listen to me. And if there was no keeper of the land, the machine would come and soon destroy the sky. They didn't listen. They didn't listen. They didn't listen to me. And I told them if they destroyed the land,
Folks, before we get going back again with Native American Church, I want to play another song, less than 3 minutes. This song was recorded back in 1972 while I was a member of a singing group called Up With People. It was sung by Frank Fields, who one of the most talented guys I've ever met. It's called In a Sacred Manner I Live.
The hot sun on the dry ground, sagebrush and mesquite and chaparral around, out away's a big dust devil moving on its way. I guess they're never still. In a sacred manner I live, to the heavens I gaze. In a sacred manner I live. My horses are many, the high grass mighty oak and the tiny flower, the sandstone in the valley, the mountains high and running streams. In a sacred manner I live, to the heavens I gaze. In a sacred manner I live. My horses are many, the sparrow and the antelope, the eagle high and the buffalo. Oh, Mother Earth, I can feel you as one with me.
I won't be insulted. I won't be laid a hand on. I don't do these things to other people. I require the same from them.
Pretty much says it, doesn't it, James? That was John Wayne from The Shootist. But, yeah, I thought you'd might like to hear that In a Sacred Manner I Lived. I thought it's It's just a little song somebody wrote, but it's a great one. Well, we're halfway through the program, and anytime you want to ask people to call in, you're welcome to. Doesn't guarantee anybody will, but James, did you want to take a minute and let Mark do your Mayan birthday reading?
Sure, go ahead. You know, before you do that, I just encourage anybody that listens to this. I understand you archive this.
This
program, and so on the page that you set up for me, they can go and become a member of Aklava Native American Church by just going into the links that you put on that page.
That's right. I'd really
encourage that, and if especially these medical marijuana dispensaries in California that are going through so much, they can have total protection by becoming an Aklava Native American Church independent brand. And anybody that wants the protection of being a member, all they have to do is go and what we call is a Aklava Native American Church authorized participation card. They get one of those cards, and they'll have a constitution supporting them from here on out.
That's the way.
Doesn't mean that they won't be arrested. Doesn't mean that they won't be violated. But it does mean you have a solid legal stance to be able to combat this nonsense that's going to come after you. And my prayer is this war on drugs is going to be over with, and because of the Aklava Native American Church, we'll start putting a dent in that war.
Oh. Well, Mark, what do you think?
What's that?
What do you think of James's Mayan birthday reading?
Let's see. He was born January 3rd, 1944, right?
That's right.
Yeah, in the regular Mayan day count, that was day was an 8 Ok. The Ok is, well, let's go over to 8 first. That energy of the 8 number has to do with completions and energies associating with the world, especially material aspects. It typically also relates to the top of a pyramid, and a little bit more male energy than female energy. And the Ok has to do with things like counseling, things that have to do with like being fair and authority, stuff like that. This day is sitting in the 13-day cycle of Ok-Bal. And Ok-Bal is a glyph that's associated with visions, dreams, stuff like that. So that would sort of fit in with the aspect of the peyote. So, yeah, more or less seems to fit there pretty well. I also looked at it in another viewpoint, and this one's going to go a little bit more complex. It looks at several different time flows, a forward flow of time, backward flow of time, and where the two merge and come together. And on the forward flow, it's energy having to deal with changes, truth, unveiling things, transformation of things. Has some jaguar energy here that's kind of a partner energy. And that's interesting because that energy is actually, that part of it's actually connecting back to October 10th, 1918, when the Native American Church was incorporated.
Whoa.
So I'm seeing that pull right into your birth right here, connecting back to that. It actually connects to Blue Otter, too, because that particular, his birth was on a day called 9-Eek, and the day that the Native American Church was incorporated was a 9-Eek, which is exactly 52 days after the 9-Eek that Blue Otter was born on. So there's that kind of link between those, which would be exactly 4 13-day cycles later. So 9 eeks, and you just skip over how many nines, and you get to the 9-Eek. or from 9-Eek, I mean, to 9-Eek, which is Jaguar Energy. So that one's showing a lot of connections are actually between both of you, Blue Water and you,
and
the Native American Church being incorporated.
And the Quetzalcoatl.
Yeah. Well, because the 13 day cycles is one of his numbers, because they said the pale prophet, the great healer, Lord of Wind and Waters, his numbers were 5, 8, and 13. So it's fitting in with that. So that's on a forward flow. On a backward flow, you have energy that has to deal, and this is going to be stuff that is going to be probably showing up as getting more strong in your life around 1997, 1998, in that time frame. And it was in actually on April 11th, 1997, in that time frame, that portion of your Native American church was founded, right? So right around that time frame. So that fits in with this part. And it's about catalyzing things, catalyst, balancing things, things that have to do with family, equality, and also pulling in things about supernatural powers and also ancestors, some things with ancestors. And in the Lakota world, this would connect into, this particular energy would also connect into the thunder beings. So stuff like that. And this is sitting in a cycle that's an eagle cycle, which would go with your flaming eagle name. So those types of things. Now, where these two time flows merge and come together, this is kind of the next part is more of how you move from one world cycle to the next. So it's kind of opening the door, going across the bridge, stuff like that. And it has to do with focusing, awareness, prosperity, service to others, which we've heard you talk about already numerous times, about 30 minutes ago, I think. But also things about fearlessness and justice. And so that's important. This particular type of energy seems to be also connected to things probably with the stars of the Pleiades showing up here. So, and it's also very connected back to that 8-Hawk of your birth that we talked about earlier. It's very connected to that. So does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. And what's really quite interesting is that before, I really didn't realize my Native American background until I was about 87, I guess it was. And before that, I was an international business consultant. And so I was a very rigid, black and white type of a guy. I mean, I was a consultant where I got paid just simply if I was able to make companies money, then I got paid. I didn't have a job, so I was focusing just on very tangible things, and for almost 20 years, that's what I did. And so when I got into the Native American spirituality, or the Red Path, or whatever it is, and reclaimed my heritage, I'm actually related to a fellow by the name of Osceola, a Seminole, plus I'm related to James Mooney, and I didn't even know my Indian background. I had no idea, even though I lived with my grandparents up till I was about 3, but I was one of those people that was taken away from them.
Mm-hmm.
His heritage. But then when my tribe found me in 1987, it was in a phone call, and it's on the website if people want to see it. And people need to know that information on the website was vetted by the United States Attorney General, or United States Attorney General Office.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm probably the only Native American medicine man that's been vetted by the United States government. And probably there'll never be another one. Because of the circumstances. But anyway, when I stepped on this red path, I stepped into a world that was totally foreign to me. And I mean, when people, Clifford Jake, White Buffalo Man, Clifford Jake, a Paiute, Bannock Shoshone road man or peyote man, he took me under his arm. I was really, really sick at that particular time. And he taught me so much over a 10-year period of time. It was just, I mean, he taught me everything that he was able to teach me, as I was just very stubborn, stupid, but I hopefully some of it got through me. And after he cured me, I went to him and I said, "We got to take this medicine to the white man." This is about 1988 or something like that. And he says, "No, I'm not going to do that." And he had some choice words that I'm not going to repeat here. What he ended up doing is saying, "I will train you so you can take it to the white man, James." And that's what he did. He spent the next 10 years, and then a few weeks before he died, he passed over his cedar bag, basically a sign, "Now it's for me to take over or start." He's not going to be around much longer, but he was. About a week later, he passed over. But prior to that time, just about after I got to really know him, I was passing this project that they were making a dam, a reservoir, called Quail Creek Reservoir. And I was going past it one day, and it hadn't been completed. And this person I was driving with said to me, "I got a story to tell you about Clifford Jake in this dam." And he said, about 5 years before they started to build it, they were having all these committee meetings. And these committee meetings, they said, was to get the authorization of the people to build this thing in the first place. Well, at one of these meetings, there was a couple hundred people in this room, I guess. It was a high school, and they had this big meeting going on. Well, Clifford Jake, with his white cowboy hat and his boots, he stood about 5'6" or something like that, and he's all wrinkled up like a peyote button, comes walking in. Didn't even sit down, just walked right up to the front and said to the county commissioners or whoever it was, and said, "We know you're going to build this. This is because you don't care about our sacred burial ground, but this you're putting this reservoir over our sacred burial grounds, and we know you're going to go ahead and build it. And you don't care about us, but I'm going to tell you something. 1 year from the day that you complete that dam, it's going to go away." Now, that was told to me before they had completed that dam. And the person that told me said, "You know, this has happened. This happened about 8 years ago." And this person was relating that to me. Well, a year to the day that dam was completed, there was an earthquake, and that dam went away. how do you explain that? How in the world are you able to explain that kind of I remember sitting on the bridge that was washed away, and there's the thing that was sticking out, and I was watching this water coming out of this dam, and I just said to myself, "What the hell have I got myself into?" Because I had no way to explain that. No way. And to this day, I still don't understand how to explain that. And here's another thing coming from Clifford. Clifford, like I said to you, when I first met Clifford, I was very, very ill. I mean, I was extremely ill. And that's the reason I found him and looked him up, was to see if I could get some help from the peyote with him. Because my tribal chief of Seminole, which is the peyote is not a Seminole medicine necessarily, suggested for me to seek out the peyote where she thought that I could be cured of the peyote, and so I did, and that's how I got to know Clifford. Well, when when I finally showed up at Clifford's doorstep, and it was a few months later, a year, less than a year, he was able to cure me of the ailment that I had, and which was just a miracle. And what I did, that's when I asked him, you know, to take it to the white man because they really need this help, and he didn't want to, and then he started training me to do this. Well, anyway, so about 2000, which is about 12 years later, they raided my church, or raided the Oklahoma Native American Church in Benjamin, and they took all of the, about 12,000 buttons, peyote buttons. And so I go down crying to Clifford about, you know, they raided Oklahoma Native American Church, and they took 12,000 buttons. And he starts laughing. I said, what are you laughing about? I mean, this is serious. They took our medicine, our sacred medicine. And he said, didn't that peyote cure you? I said, well, yeah, it sure did. He said, well, now they got it, and now it's going to start curing Utah County.
Yeah. That's kind of like whoever had the, you know, remember the Philistines captured the Sacred Ark, and after a while they brought it back and said, here, we don't want it. Yeah.
That's exactly right.
Yeah.
So it's happening. And the same thing, when the state case failed, then the federal government took the possession of that peyote, and then now it's going to clean up the federal government. It's doing it. It's amazing. It's just so amazing. I mean, these ancient predictions. I mean, holy mackerel! I mean, these prophecies. My basic belief is, I mean, I just kind of step back and I just don't understand it. But I tell you something now, after being with these elders over the last 20 some odd years now, I just say, I don't question anything. I just sit and listen, and because there's so much I don't understand, and so much it's being revealed. It's just incredible. I know that it's like the Kogis are people that are so many indigenous isolated tribes in Mexico and Peru and South America. They've been sending these emissaries up to the United States to the highest peaks where they take their sacred waters and plant the waters there in prayer, trying to wake up what they call their little brothers, that they're messing up. They're screwing all things up and trying to get them back into balance. And so they're sending all these emissaries to the United States, trying to get us well so we stop messing things up. And this is a prophecy that they knew was going to happen years ago. Will Nakima, a very good friend of mine, is a Hopi elder. And he and I were doing a film by a news media out of Switzerland. They sent a news media to talk to Will Nakima and a couple other elders and myself, trying to find out why is it so hard for the Native American culture to be able to survive in the United States when everybody around the world just honors us, but yet they're trying to prosecute the Oklahoma Native American Church. And so they sent this film crew from Switzerland. And Will Nakima, oh my gosh, he was just incredible. He's giving me history of the Hopis and foretelling all these things that happened and the way they settled. And it's what's really unusual, and which I had never even put it to thought, is that Will stated that the Great Spirit told them to settle where they couldn't cross the river, which is the Grand Canyon area. And so they settled there, and so the migration going west from the east coast going west, the trail was below them, south of them, and north of them, so that they were able to keep their traditions without anybody messing around with them. I mean, how do you explain those kinds of things, you know?
I know, it's crazy.
It's actually beautiful when you think about it, that we have these incredible men and these incredible cultures that have sustained themselves in peace, not warring, not standing up and living in hatred and so angry and wanting to have retribution. No, they just live their lives, they hold on to who they are, and they tell their stories with people that want to listen. And if you listen to it, you get this peace in you that there is something that's looking after it. You know, all we have to do is just follow our hearts and we'll be okay.
Yeah, who was it in the Bible that said, signs shall follow them? Well, guess what? And, you know, back in 72, I believe it was, see, I didn't meet Rolling Thunder until about 1990, but they had Rolling Thunder and Mad Bear Anderson, who founded the White Roots of Peace Council. They threw a big powwow. It was probably the first All Nations powwow. It was in South Jordan Park. And they came there. When I first met Rolling Thunder, he was really angry with the Mormon Church because LDS attorneys were from Zion's security were providing attorneys for Peabody Coal. And they wanted to wake the Mormon Church up, so they threw this big powwow out there, and the church closed Temple Square, put armed guards on the wall, absolutely refused to see Rolling Thunder. So Rolling Thunder got on the radio, and he told him, he says, you need to get back to your original set of instructions, or you're going to be flooded out. This is what Mad Bear Anderson said. Now, Mad Bear, the last day of the powwow, he gave a spiritual message, and he says the truth of what I say is going to be verified to you. He says the day after I leave, there will be 3 days of a female rain. That's just, you know, like a light mist. That was in August. Utah never gets rain like that. Much less in August, and yeah, these guys are absolutely unbelievable. Apparently, Mad Bear Anderson could travel without his suitcase. I know Chokash Aho hosted him when he was in the Bay Area back in the 70s, and he wanted to talk with Mad Bear Anderson. Well, Mad Bear was back on the reservation in New York. And Chokash said Mad Bear or Rolling Thunder just went out on the balcony, shut the door behind him, and lit his pipe. And 15 minutes later, Mad Bear was knocking on the door. Well, what do you want? And then shortly thereafter, somebody found his truck on the side of the road in New York, and they just knew when that happened just to drive it home. So, yeah, I mean, these are powerful, you know, witnesses to the world that these signs that Jesus talked about are very apparent and operative in the Native American Church.
That is true. It's going on, and I want to say it's extremely important to realize that the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints they're doing incredibly good things, and it just so happens I happened to be honored to attend the Indian Service program, where the LDS Church gathers hundreds of these very wealthy people of their church in a banquet where they raise hundreds of thousands of dollars, okay, and I was there with Gary Tom. Gary was the opening flute player, and it was just beautiful the way he has his whole regalia, and there's this mist, and he's playing the Amazing Grace and the other music arrangements that the that the flute is able to play, and I happened to be sitting there with the 70s of the Native American of the LDS faith, and I was just treated royally. I mean, literally royally, and not a phony royally. They were just beautiful, and to keep in mind, this whole banquet is to raise money to send Native American people of heritage. My son, who is a practicing attorney right now, received monies from this organization that brought him to become a lawyer, for goodness sakes. I mean, how can you deny these kind of good things that, that the LDS Church is doing? And it's just time for us to forget the nonsense and learn and just forgive. And if people want to make amends, fantastic. But it's not for us to do that. Our responsibility is to forgive and let go. And I have a lot of honor for Jesus Christ and his mission. And I think one of the greatest gifts that he gave to the human condition was when he was hanging on that, as reported, hanging on that cross after he'd been through all this pure hell, and he looks up into heavens and says, "Forgive them, for they know not what to do."
Yep.
It's forgiveness. It is a time for forgiveness. And to get on and serve one another, respect each other's differences. That's what we've got to do now.
That's what Arvo Looking Horse said. He says, "We it's a time we heal together now." But you still got an undercurrent of racism. But oddly enough, it's usually racism of federally recognized Indians toward non-federally recognized. I know there were five or six tribes that were state recognized here in Tennessee a few years ago. And we have the just now passed principal chief of the Cherokee Nation, Chad Smith, on video saying they were spending close to $1 million a year fighting these state recognized tribes because they thought they were a threat. I'm a member of a state recognized tribe in Alabama, but. You've got and the eagle feather issue. I mean, that whole thing was pushed through by a state recognized Indian, and then they eventually wrote state recognized Indians out of being able to have eagle feathers. And it's all
nonsense. That stuff. I mean, you belong to the Aquavan Native American Church. You've got the right to have eagle feathers. And the Aquavan Native American Church is very, very unique of any other Native American church, even on reservation ground. Right now, as you and I are speaking, Aquavan Native American Church is the only Native American church authorized by the United States military to utilize peyote bases.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, think about that.
When are we going to get Native American chaplains?
What?
When are we going to get Native American chaplains?
No, we already got one.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
No, I mean
Harlan Binet is his name. He's with the United States Navy, and he's doing a phenomenal job. And he trains these people to do the peyote ceremony, the teepee ceremonies in Virginia. He was helping people being transported to Afghanistan. They're doing on bases, they're doing on ships, everything. Aquavan Native American Church is the only one that is able to do it. Another thing unique about Aquavan Native American Church, Aquavan Native American Church personnel, is a star man, is the person that started it, started the sweat lodges in the Salt Lake City, Veterans Hospital, VA hospitals. Now, every VA hospital, from my understanding, because of Aquavan Native American Church's medicine people, is now in every VA hospital in the United States.
And they can't keep you from smoking tobacco in any
That's
building.
Right, they can't. And now there's another good thing. Back in 19, When I was working in the prison system, people started complaining because I was doing sacred prayer pipe ceremonies inside the building. And because they had passed this Clean Air Act, they wanted to, some people wanted me to stop doing the pipe ceremonies in the buildings. Well, the then governor, Michael Leavitt, Governor Leavitt, signed into law an exception to the Clean Air Act specifically for the sacred prayer pipes. And as a matter of fact, I and about 100 to 200 other Native American medicine people showed up at the Rotunda in Salt Lake City, and we smoked a bowl.
I remember that,
Governor Levin.
Yeah.
I mean, so, you know, I mean, it's progressing if you really think about it. And then not only that, when I was marrying people in southern Utah, and the county registers didn't want to accept some of my marriages as being legitimate, then Leavitt again encouraged the legislators, and they ended up passing, changing the law, adding in Native American spiritual leaders. I mean, so there, it's happening. And then not only that, when it was against the law that you would do sweat lodges in Utah, and then in 1990, there was a, I forgot the guy's name, but he ended up changing, that's the reason I started doing sweat lodges, because they won a court action against the state of Utah where it made it mandatory that we did sweat lodges inside the prison system. And so they contacted Gary Tom to see if he would find somebody who would start the sweat lodge.
Water, yeah.
And between Gary Tom and Will Nakima and myself, we started the most successful Indian program in the prison systems in the United States. And it all started from Utah. And so, you know, I mean, we just got to forget the nonsense that everybody goes through as they're growing up. And the Mormon Church is a new church. They make a lot of mistakes, you know, horrible mistakes.
Well, they're redeeming themselves. You know, they were the first state to outlaw cannabis, and now they're reversing things.
Yeah, and then the state of Utah and Idaho are the only two states in the United States that have a laws on their book, which is totally illegal, stating that only federally recognized Native American persons are able to be members of the Native American Church. They're the only two states and controlled by the LDS Church, you know. So, you know, I mean, you can go on and saying how bad somebody may be or may not be, but, you know, all I know is when I'm in there, I was asked to do a prayer in the tabernacle for this interfaith organization that was sponsored by the LDS Church. And here they had me, okay, who had me as one of the featured people to submit a prayer. And with Gary Tom playing his flute and Jimmy Bernhard Fernandez of Apache playing a drum. And we gave the a prayer, one of the major prayers of opening the whole thing in the tabernacle. And then you have the thing that I attended just the other night. So people are striving. They want to connect. They want to honor and respect each other. And I really want to encourage that, because that's what all my elders have taught me, and is to respect and honor. You know, forgive, James, forgive. And let it go. Let all those things go. Anyway.
I guess we haven't talked a whole lot about cannabis yet. I do know that that when the Mormon pioneers first got to Salt Lake, that it was growing all around the Utah Lake, and What's really interesting is the Bible speaks in the book of Revelations of this herb that has 12 different fruits and would heal the nations, and it says it would grow on both sides of the river. And then when I read that, I remembered what Harry Anslinger, who was the first drug czar, he either told it to a reporter, it was reported, or he wrote in his memoirs that when he was given this job to eradicate marijuana, this is back in Reefer Madness days, given a small budget and maybe 16 agents to do this nationwide, he drove out onto the Key Bridge and stopped, and he looked out over the Potomac River, and he says, "My gosh," he says, "this stuff is growing on both sides of the river." And, you know, nowadays the DEA would like to have you think that kind of hemp, you know, didn't grow here, and there's all kinds of lies told about it, but hemp and cannabis was the number one and two biggest commodities traded worldwide for thousands of years. And before Standard Oil, you know, the only oil that was used in automobiles or any purpose other than whale oil was hemp oil. It was absolutely necessary for national security. It was illegal not to grow it in colonial days. So I thought maybe you might want to switch gears, you know, when you feel like the time's right. Let's talk about cannabis.
I mean, I have no problems talking about cannabis at all, because the ACLA, the Native American Church, or the Native American Church, is an earth-based healing religion, meaning any plant, any tree, any mushroom, anything grown by Mother Earth is sacred to us and can be utilized or is considered as a sacrament to the Native American Church, pure and simple, unequivocal. And in order for them to deny you of taking a sacrament or doing something, you have to meet a compelling interest standard. And smoking a joint doesn't even get on the table of a compelling interest standard. And so we're back to what we started this whole discussion about earlier, is if the Oklahoma Native American Church, in order for anybody to violate a Native American Church space or member, they have to prove in a court of law that they met a compelling interest standard. And smoking a joint doesn't even begin to start with that. And our bylaws basically say, very, very evidently, every plant of this earth, Oklahoma Native American Church, the mother church, is peyote. That's all I do. That's all I deal with, is peyote. However, if you have an individual branch, such as Oklahoma Native American Church of Hawaii, that's a good one, because right now Hawaii has taken the United States at task for taking their sacrament, which was marijuana, out of the United States mail, and the United States government has got, right now, they're being prosecuted for illegally taking our sacrament out of the mail. I mean, I don't know if you can understand the significance of that.
Mm-hmm.
I'm stuck. Okay? They're the defendants. The United States government is the defendant.
Right. And this is a legal shipment. It was marked, because that's what the law required, was that it be
that's
declared
right
on the package what it was. And so here they call the cops in and they raid you, and your son took it to him. He didn't get his weed back, but
well, he's going to probably get compensated for $2,000 or something like that. But
well, you know, Missouri, a few years ago, DEA agents burned down about 50 acres of okra, and thinking it was marijuana, and the farmer sued, and he was awarded $50 million, and when the federal government balked at that, he says, "Well, you are the people that wrote in the newspaper and established the value of the crop."
If they want to question whether it was a tradition, because that, you know, what was his name, Randolph Hearst, with his newspapers wanting
yep.
to eliminate the market paper, which cannabis makes the best paper in the world because
yep.
it doesn't need any chemicals. So between Du Bois and Randolph Hearst and then Standard Oil wanting to outlaw cannabis because I understand it makes the best biofuel in the world.
Constitution's printed on it.
Yeah.
Uniforms, sails, rope.
Still, Brazil is using, corn to make their biofuel, and cannabis is proven to have a 1 to 10 yield more than corn is. I mean, when you start, so you realize in all reality, when you take peyote that is actually healthy for one to take, why you have to ask, why was there a law being made? And now we're back to the beginning description of what the statement that I made right at the beginning. The reason for these laws and the war on drugs is to suppress American native culture.
Mm-hmm.
And the word Tuscarora, which is a tribe in Northeast, and you know what that means, Tuscarora? Hemp harvesters.
Mm-hmm.
So the entire war, in my opinion, is to suppress the American native culture. And the reason they want to suppress it is to eliminate the competition to oil, to paper making, the pharmaceutical industry. That's what it's all about.
Mm-hmm.
And so once people support Aqua of a Native American Church, I guarantee you it's going to start deflating that balloon.
Hey, people
and
are
so one of the major reasons that when you offered me this opportunity to have this weekly show is that to educate people that now there is a way to protect yourself, especially these medical marijuana dispensaries. I mean, to me, that is just, I mean, I just cannot fathom how they could go after these people trying to heal individuals, war
mm-hmm.
veterans. I mean, it's an atrocity. And so there is an answer, and it's legal. You don't have to be obnoxious or anything. You just join the church, or if you're a dispensary, become a church and deal with people that are members of the Native American Church, and everybody's protected. And you get a million people standing up and not plea bargaining, then the whole society will say, leave Native American Church alone.
Hey, that's what Gandhi did with salt. He brought down the British in India for the salt boycott.
Right. Well, what this is just simply in peace and living by the law and demanding just standing there, don't sue. Because suing, you go into a court of law, it's just another form of war, for goodness sakes. Eliminate that concept. Just stand up for your constitutional rights. Do not plea bargain. Be a member of Aqua Native American Church, and you will change history.
Oh, by the way, do you ever meet a fellow from Southern Utah by the name of David Wilson? Like a big 6'6" red-haired Lenape descendant. His family, three weekends out of four, they're off dancing at some powwow. Did you ever meet David?
No, I don't recall him at all.
He used to go down south of Cortez, Colorado. There was a Native American church down there, and that's where he worshiped. But he told me that the first time he tried, he just could not believe the unbelievable feeling of love that he had toward himself and other people. And but he did have one time, you know, these ceremonies last all night, and it gets a little smoky in there, and he said there was a fellow sitting around the fire, and it was, you know, just before sun up, and everybody was pretty well bleary-eyed, and apparently the fellow that was sitting across the fire from him was bald, and he let his head go down, and the guy across the fire hollered out, "That man has no face." You know what I mean? He thought it was hallucinating, but he wasn't. It was just a little smoky in there. But I didn't know if you'd ever heard that story or not.
No, I hadn't, but I can tell you this. People tell me that peyote is hallucinogenic. Well, I probably have taken peyote no less than, I can't even say how many thousands of times. But the thing is, I've never had a hallucination. And every time I've been in a ceremony with somebody that I've conducted and they think that they've had a hallucination of some kind, I ask them, when was the last time you had LSD or some kind of hallucination? Even a cannabis will give you some hallucinations. And invariably, they'll say they've taken cannabis or they've had LSD or some hallucinogenic like that. And what I've discovered is the peyote, while it purges that out of their systems, and so they'll have a flashback. And that's the only time I've ever had anybody that hallucinate. The thing is with peyote, it shows you the truth. That's what it does.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes, that just will blow your mind.
Yeah, sometimes, they just, some people, the haters, think the truth is a hallucination. So shows you how far they are from creator.
But I think we're coming close to the end of this this time of 2 hours, and I just want to remind, this is going to be held again next Sunday at the same time, and this is going to be archived. But is that on the page? You put the abilities for people to join the church, and I just hope that next Sunday we have it arranged or set up. And we can publicize it that I'm more than willing to answer all questions and to
absolutely
assist them to find the website, and I'll do anything I can to assist people become members of the Aquaman Native American Church, and especially for these medical marijuana dispensers. It's just evil for these people to have these troubles trying to help the fellow human beings. I mean, this is not, and I just desire to protect these people so we can do it. We can do it.
Hey, I know we've got some live listeners, folks. We've got about 10 minutes left of the show. Why don't you call in? You can call in 347-996-3318. It's right on the screen, or there's a little S right next to the phone number you can Skype in. And but if you're listening live, I know there's a few folks out there. There are a lot of people are going to listen to this as an archive show. But feel free to call in, even if it's just to say hi. You're perfectly welcome to call in. We're waiting for your call at 347-996-3318, and to talk with James Flaming Eagle Mooney. If nobody calls in the next couple of minutes, we'll just wrap it up a hair early, and this is going to be fun. This is a good night. It's a good thing to do, and in a good way.
Well, I have a few other things that I can share.
Oh, go ahead.
People. We have Native American churches from tribes that are becoming affiliated with the Aquaman Native American Church. And there's absolutely no cost to these individuals at all when they are already Native American Church. We just want to unite with everybody, and so that we're with bonded arms with each other, and in unity with love and kindness, and hopefully this will encourage other people to be part of us and put down this anger. It's just, having anger in your heart and directing it towards other people. It's like taking poison and expecting the other person to die. The thing it's just hurting yourself, and it's just time for forgiveness. But be wise. Be wise and develop the courage. You know, stand up. Don't plea bargain. That's all. Don't plea bargain. That's the thing. Don't be intimidated. There was a movie made some time ago called Thunderheart, and Val Kilmer played in it. And it was about some things that were going on in 1973. And Val Kilmer was playing an FBI agent that was a half-breed, and he was trying to help out on this reservation stuff, and he was first going in there as a cop and being really silly and the whole thing. And you know, when he introduced himself and his other partner of the FBI was introducing themselves as the FBI, and the person that they were interviewing or questioning says, "Oh yeah, I know about the FBI, Federal Bureau of Intimidation."
Yeah.
That's what's been going on since 1918, is strict intimidation.
Well, you remember when they got to Jimmy's house and he said, don't break down the door. The goons just busted it down last week. He says the key. He says it's in the can. You know.
Oh yeah.
Under the. And you remember what? You remember the badger that bit him?
Yeah.
Well, this is the sound effect from the movie. There it is. That's it. That's where I got the badger. That is from.
I'll be darned.
That was a good movie.
So
that was.
I hope that next time that we get together on a Sunday that we advertise that phone number so that we can organize ourselves so that we'll put out a question and then people can call in and then we can take some time to answer it.
Yeah.
And I want to do everything possible that Oklahoma Native American Church is capable of doing to ending this war on drugs. It's a blight. And in our reality, it is a war on the indigenous culture of the world. That's what it really is. It's a war on the indigenous cultures of this world.
Yeah. All we got to do is just get the people that are nominal Christians just to believe their Bible, because you know, kibitz was part of the holy anointing oil that their kings and their altars were anointed with. So you can,
you can
imagine, yeah.
There's a brother. His name is Roger Christie. He's in Hawaii. He's in jail right now, federal jail. He is not plea bargaining, and they're going flipping nuts. They do not know how to deal with it. And Roger is also, he has an Oklahoma Native American Church of Hilo, and he is standing tall. If people would just take his example, and you had every person that got a ticket or was arrested for their cannabis, and they would take an example that what Roger is doing, this war on drugs would be over within a year. Simple as that. But people have got to develop the courage, the self-esteem, to make a stand and say, "I'm not plea bargaining." And that's the secret. And if they are a member of the Native American Church, then they have a legal stand that will also protect them.
But you can't do it ex post facto. You can't get arrested, then join, and claim ex post facto. So if you want the protection, you got to be a member.
This is the saddest thing I'm going to say to you. I got to know, I had this gal come by my house. She went to the University of Utah. And she walked in, she gave me a call, came in, wanted a card. She immediately came over, told me she could get one. She knocked on the door, came in the house, and she says, "I'm about 3 weeks late." And I said, "Well, I don't understand. What you're saying?" She says, "Well, I was engaged to my fiance, and he was working on his PhD, and he got stopped, and he was arrested for some resin in a bowl of cannabis. It's just resin in a bowl. He ended up spending 3 months in jail for resin. He lost his ability to be in the doctorate program. and 3 weeks before she came to me, he had committed suicide.
Oh my gosh.
How can a citizenship allow one of their sons or daughters or fellow citizens have their life destroyed because of resin in a it's just beyond me. It's just absolutely beyond me. I just pray that people will get some courage about them, join the Aquaman Native American Church, and make a stand. Make a stand.
Oh, well, yeah, you gotta get the word out, though, and they're not going to publicize it for you, so it just...
I think you're doing it. And I think that you're supplying Aquaman Native American Church is going to make some big changes. But we've got a couple minutes or whatever it is left.
We can go past, there's nothing written in stone. You can go as long as you want to.
Well, I just want to just say, to sum everything up, there is an answer to the war on drugs now. It's legitimate. It's disciplined. It's well-organized. Aquaman Native American Church is here. It is supported by the Lakota Sioux, by the Paiutes, by the Cherokees. I've got proclamations. We also by the Polynesian, the Tui Kingdom, which is the kingdom of all Polynesia. We are associated with them. We're associated with the United Nations. We are associated with the United States military. We're here. All you need to do is join and stand together, and you will end this war on drugs. I promise you that's what will happen, providing you stand. And these medical marijuana dispensaries, my prayer is you become a Aquaman Native American Church, and you'll be protected so you can help and serve communities with the healing elements of cannabis. That's my prayer. And so with those words, I'm going to say thank you ever so much. It's been an honor to be part of this, and I'm looking forward to next Sunday.
Absolutely, and we'll roll the outro music, and we'll talk to you offline in a couple of minutes.
All right. Uh-oh.
So the path is not easy. I'm grateful for this life, for the chance to behold your face again. When my sacred journey's over, when it all comes to an end, I'll enter the next life and live again. I hope, I hope, I hope.
As Blue Water, seventh great-grandson of Old Tassel, first beloved man of the Cherokee, I'm remembering what Old Tassel said to the prevailing culture. Many proposals have been made to us to adopt your laws, your religion, your manners, and your customs. We have done so. Now it is time for our cultures to accept Old Tassel's ways and assisting us to walk in harmony with Mother Earth and Father Sky. Aho.
you.
You have been led by the Spirit to Prophecy Keepers Radio, a cooperative service of the White Roots of Peace Council. Whether it be the modern Asaga of Peru, the current Kahunas of Hawaii, today's medicine people of the Americas, the Holy Ones of Africa, shamans of the East, North, West, and South, or the present day Anawehis of the Cherokee, we bring you the traditional elders and teachers of our modern times and their confidants from the Americas, the steppes of Asia, the Holy Land, the islands of the sea, Africa, and Australasia. We have not been conquered, and we defy the established order. This is Will Bluewater, the host of Prophecy Keepers Radio, speaking on behalf of the White Roots of Peace Council.
It's 500-year resistance. You can't break the connection. Follow? It's 500-year resistance. You can't break the connection. Follow? It's 500-year resistance. You can't break the connection. Follow?